And now we can actually start talking about meditation. For many of you have done meditation before, some have not done much at all, and some have hardly done anything. And so I have to start from the very beginnings of meditation. And what meditation is all about is learning how to make the mind, the inner world, so peaceful you get to deep states of stillness. When those deep states of stillness get strong, not only do you get enormous inner energy and happiness, you also get a great sense of insight as well. An illustrative story which I'd like to invoke at the beginning of meditation retreats was an anecdote from my life living in Australia. Living in a monastery which is situated on top of a hill. We've had that monastery in Australia for over 27 years now. And when we were first looking for a piece of land in order to build a Buddhist monastery just outside of Perth, we wanted it to be roughly about an hour from the city, far enough away that it would be secluded and peaceful, but close enough so people would come and visit to feed us. So we found this nice place on top of the hill. We also wanted it to be on a hill somewhere because of tradition. Because you all know the tradition that holy people are supposed to be on top of mountains and hills. You never hear of a holy man living in a swamp. Except for Yoda in Star Wars, so he lived in a swamp apparently, but he was the exception. Real holy people live on top of mountains. So we managed to find a nice piece of land on top of the mountain, and it's not that high a mountain, it's not that far up from the plains, it's only just over 2 kilometres. Now I've been living and working and meditating in that monastery for about 7 years, or maybe, I think roughly 7 years, before this event happened. Because every time I would leave that monastery in Australia, and return to that monastery in Australia, it would always be in a vehicle, in a car. And one day, it was a beautiful spring morning, and I had lots of energy and lots of time. I decided that morning to walk up that hill. And that was the first time I walked up that hill after living on this top for about 7 years. I'm taking photographs, I better. That was the first time in about 7 years I walked up that hill. And what happened was quite astounding. Because right as I started walking up that hill, I realized I could not recognize my surroundings. That hillside looked totally different to everything I remembered from looking through the window of a car for 7 years. I saw more detail, more information, which I'd never seen before. And it was such a strange experience that I stopped and stared. And when I stood still, the hillside changed again. I saw little lichen on the rocks, little flowers poking up from the hillside. I saw just all the beautiful different shapes of bark on the trees and the rocks which were scattered amongst the hills. I saw so much beauty and so much detail there that it was one of the most beautiful sights. And I wondered, why had I not seen that before? As I stood still, actually the colours became so much richer and deeper. Like you've never seen greens so green before, so many different shades of green. Even the bark, it wasn't just grey or brown, it had all these amazing different textures and colours there. And the whole thing looked so beautiful. But I couldn't believe I'd missed that for so many years. It was such a strange experience that I wondered what was going on. You know, was I going crazy or mad or what was happening? And of course, many of you know that I was a scientist before I became a monk. So I tried to interpret that strange experience just through basic science. It didn't take me long to understand what was happening. And from that understanding, to get a great simile for what meditation is. Because I realized when you're looking through the window of a speeding car, the light does not have sufficient time to form a proper image on the back of your eye, on the retina, before another image comes up, dislodges the old, and you have to attend to that. Images come so fast that none of them fully form, and you don't have time to explore those images. That's what it's like looking through the window of a speeding car. You think you see what's going on out there, but you only see a fraction, and nothing is deep or rich in your experience. But when I got out of the car and started walking, I was going much slower, so the image on the back of my eye could form more fully, so the colours were richer, the detail was more. So I actually saw much more. In fact, I saw more than I'd ever seen before when looking through the window of a car. When I stopped, and I stood absolutely still, only then did the image in the back of my eye have a chance to fully form. And all the colours had the chance to be fully rich. It always was that green, but I never had the time to allow that colour to mature on the back of my eye. All that detail was already out there, but I never had time for the picture to fully develop so I could see everything. And I realized that when you are still, you see so much more. Everything becomes richer, deeper, and more full. The colors, the scents, the touch, everything becomes richer because you're spending much more time on every experience. And I realized that that is a great symbol of people's lives. We see life as if through the window of a speeding car. We go so fast from place to place, job to job, day to day, because we never slow down. What we see of life is only a tiny fraction of what's out there. And colours and tastes aren't rich. Why? Because we don't give them the time to fully form. That's the problem with life. We go too fast. When you meditate, you go much slower. Until you may even get to that experience when you actually stop. And when you stop, only then can the images of life fully form in your mind. Where you can see everything in great detail. And the surprising thing, which is very true, is what you see becomes very, very beautiful. When people know how to meditate, they become happier and happier and happier. You can see so much more beauty in the world. So this is an indication, a simile, which shows you what meditation is. Instead of your mind moving so fast, we simplify, we slow down. We allow things to go at a very slow pace until they finally slow and go to a stop. I know I've got my nature is always to tell jokes. And there's a great Buddhist joke about this. There's this one fellow over in Perth who just finished a retreat. And during the retreat, his mind was so peaceful. His mind went so slowly that when he went to work the following day when the retreat was finished, so that his boss saw him, everything he was doing was so slow, he even moved his arms very, very slow. As he walked, he was very mindful and slow. And he worked in the zoo in Perth. So his boss thought, what job can I give this guy today? Because the boss understood meditation, makes you become very mindful and slow. So he thought, I've got the best job for you. The slowest animals in the whole zoo. This morning you can look after the tortoise enclosure. So that morning he put him in charge of the tortoises. You know the tortoises go really, really slow. So you go look after the tortoise. So off he went, walking very slowly. As he went to the tortoise enclosure to look after them in the morning. And at lunchtime, the boss came to check up on him. And he saw the tortoise enclosure gate. The door was wide open. And all the tortoises had escaped. And the boss said, "What did you do?" "Well," said the meditator, "I just slowly opened the door and whoosh, they all get out." If you're going slow, even tortoises go fast. But when you are meditating, that's what happens. You do go slow. And when you go slow, you see much more, you feel much more, you get more happy. So in meditation, the slowness, the stillness, the insight, being able to see much more detail of what's actually going on, and the happiness, all go together. That's actually an important part of meditation. Understand wherever there is stillness, there'll be insight and happiness. Wherever there's insight, there'll be stillness, and there'll also be this beautiful happiness. Wherever there's real happiness is always stillness and insight too. I know that sometimes, here in Malaysia and many other places, people still have the idea that there are two types of meditation, Vipassana and Samatha. And to avoid that question about which one are we doing or what should we do, it's not really a question, as the following simile will make absolutely clear that there was this couple, it's one of my similes, there was this couple called Sam and Vi, husband and wife. The full name was Sam Hatta and Vi Passana. So Sam Hatta and Vi Passana lived happily together in their house. And one day after lunch, they decided to go out for some exercise. They wanted to climb Meditation Mountain. And Sam Hatta wanted to go on Meditation Mountain because at the top of the mountain, it was so still and peaceful. It was like being in heaven. But Vi, his wife, she wanted to go up there for the view, because you could see for miles on top of Meditation Mountain. So Sam went up there for the peace. Vi went up there for the view. But they also decided to take their dog with them. They went for a walk. And their dog's name was Metta. So Sam, Atta, Vi, Passana, and Metta the dog went up Meditation Mountain. And the higher they got, the more peaceful it was. Even halfway up, Sam was so happy, which was so still, halfway up Meditation Mountain. And Vi, she could see so far, even halfway up. She had her camera taking great pictures. And as for Metta the dog, then the higher Metta got up that hill, the more it wagged its tail. He was getting very happy. And when they got to the top of Meditation Mountain, it was so still, absolutely peaceful, so much that Sam, isn't it so wonderfully still up here? But Sam also had a pair of eyes, so he could also enjoy the view, which went on forever. He could see everything on top of Meditation Mountain. And Vi Passana, she was really getting off on the great view. Again, she could see forever on top of Meditation Mountain. But she also could appreciate the stillness up there. And as for Metta the dog, in the scene when dogs are really happy, they go running around, wagging their tails so hard it's about to fall off. That's what happened with Metta the dog. She was just so happy on top of Meditation Mountain. The reason is because on top of Meditation Mountain, stillness, the great view or insight, and happiness or metta, they all coexist. They all come together on top of Meditation Mountain. So, you know that sometimes people come up and they tell me their great insights of what they see when they think they're getting somewhere meditation. Or they tell me how peaceful they are. But that's, I don't really believe them. when you come to interviews. When you say all the profound insights you have, when you describe all the deep states of stillness, I'm not really listening to you. What I am doing is looking for your smile to see how happy you really are. Since that happiness is the best indicator I know that a person has got some deep meditation experiences. That's the best indicator. And I mention that because I want to encourage that during this retreat. If you think I struggle, 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 and that way I'm going to achieve something, you're wasting a lot of time. You've got to develop a much more subtle mind, a mind which can be still and peaceful and happy. If you can do that, you can understand the path of meditation. Actually, there are two types of meditation. Not samatha and vipassana. I've taught this a long time now, that two types of meditation are second noble truth meditation and third noble truth meditation. Using the framework of the Buddha's four noble truths. So you all know the four noble truths? What's the first noble truth?
Suffering,
yes. What's the second noble truth?
Cause of suffering.
Cause, which is?
Isolating of suffering.
No, we haven't got that far yet. Slow down. What's the second noble truth? Is the cause of suffering. What is the cause of suffering?
Craving,
wanting, yes. And what's the third noble truth?
The end of suffering.
The end of suffering, yes. And what is the cause of the end of suffering? It is called letting go. He said, letting go of that craving is the end of suffering. That's the third noble truth. And the fourth noble truth, is the path, the eightfold path. So, second noble truth, meditation, what is that? It is that type of meditation which leads to suffering. Oh, this hurts. Oh, how long am I going to do this for? I've signed up for 8 days, there's another 7 days to go. I can't stand this. That means you've been doing second noble truth meditation. If it's hurting, if you're suffering in your meditation, it must mean that you've been doing second noble truth meditation. Craving, craving, craving. Wanting, wanting, wanting. The Buddha said, wanting causes suffering. So if you're experiencing suffering in your meditation, it means you've been wanting. You've been craving. That is why you're suffering. Please do not do second noble truth meditation. It's not advised. Instead, do third noble truth meditation. Letting go of wanting causes the happiness at the end of suffering. Causes nirvana. So, let go of wanting and do third noble truth meditation. With my wish I mean, I don't want to get concentrated. I don't want to see beautiful lights. I don't want to sort of do anything. I'm just letting go of all wanting. And if you do that, you'll find you have the peace and happiness called the end of suffering. You're doing third noble truth meditation. People, when they understand that, they understand why it is that a lot of people, they try meditation and then come back again. You know why? Because they've been doing second noble truth meditation. I went to a seminar. It's actually a meditation conference over in Sydney a couple of years ago. And there was a professor from Stanford University, Professor Philip Josephine, and he was doing some experiments on meditation. He was a professor of psychology from Stanford. And because it's a very wealthy university, he managed to get permission to do this experiment. He chose a number of his students to volunteer for this experiment. He split them into two groups, which you have to do in psychology, One is the main good, the other one is the control. And so he said one good to a meditation retreat for the day, doing lots and lots of meditation. He said the other good to a spa. You know, where you can just get some foot massages, this hot oil poured over you, hot rocks or massage. Spend and send them to a spa for the day. He wanted to find out which group were the most relaxed after the day. The one who did a meditation retreat or the ones who went to a spa. And the results were very clear cut. The people who went to the spa were far more relaxed than those who went to a meditation retreat. And it was crazy. What type of meditation are you doing? And of course, they are doing second noble truth meditation, wanting, trying to achieve something. And that is what causes you the tension, the suffering. That is not the way of meditation, of peace, of stillness. As the Buddha said, you have to go against the stream of craving. Go in the opposite direction. Just let things be. Let things go. Your job is to be an observer, not a controller. And you'll find in this meditation retreat, the more you try and control things, the more suffering you will achieve. If you let things go, don't do anything. Just be kind. Be peaceful. And be gentle. You'll find the meditation is not only incredibly deep, but so, so easy. It's because you try and do something, you mess up the whole process. Your job is just to sit there and watch and not interfere in this wonderful process of letting go. The reason why I asked Mangala, my attendant, for a cup of water was not to drink it, but to use this as my visual aid. Now I'll need a volunteer for this because you're a process. Oh, Danny, because I know you. Can you come up, please? And I want you to. He's a very honest man. Is Danny an honest man?
Yes.
Very honest man, okay. I just want you to watch this glass of water, this cup of water. Because I'm going to try and get this water to be absolutely still. So I'm holding it. Can you tell me if it's still moving? Okay, so what should I do to try and get it more still? I'll try hard. I'm really concentrating now. Is it perfectly still yet? I've really got to put some effort into this. Is it still yet? It's moving. Now, I could do this all retreat. And do you think I could ever hold this water still? It can't be done. So how can you get the water to be still? Let go, yeah, put it down. And when you put it down, it's not going yet, it's moving. But just wait a little while. Because when you pull things down and stop holding them, after a short while, is that moving?
No.
Perfectly still.
Yes.
Thank you, Daddy. A round of applause for Daddy. Thank you. Now, do you get the message about what meditation is? You try and hold your mind still. You'll never be able to do it. You just get so frustrated. But if you put things down, when you first let go, it actually moves more. You have to wait and be patient. And then if you're patient long enough, your mind becomes very still, even perfectly still. But be careful. Because many meditators, when they do this technique of just letting go, they put their cup down to get it still. You know what they do next? Is it still yet?
Not yet.
Still yet?
No, come on.
You still? No, not yet. But don't interfere with the process. Now that's actually my simile. The way that the great teacher Ajahn Chah would say it, he would say it's about the leaves on the trees. Look outside of the leaves on the tree and see that big palm tree is moving. You know why the leaf is moving? Because of the wind. It's not the nature of a leaf to move, it's something that's interfering with it, which is the wind is blowing. And if we could somehow take away the wind, then the leaf would move less and less and less and less. until it becomes perfectly still. Because that's his nature to be still. In the same way, Ajahn Chah would often say, it is the nature of the human mind to be still. It's only because of craving the wind, which means that the mind keeps moving backwards and forwards. Because it keeps moving backwards and forwards, that's why we never know stillness. It's a craving. So it's a craving is a thing we have to somehow observe, be mindful of, and see if we can stop that craving. So how can actually we stop that craving? That is the whole purpose of meditation. To be able to let go long enough for your mind to become still, so you can get to the top of meditation mountain and see it forever. And also experience the beautiful happiness, like little Metta the dog, wagging your tail so much, feels like it's falling off. Which happens in meditation, you get so much happiness, so much bliss, it really blows you away. So as we are meditating in this way, you know, you will experience these states, but unfortunately, because since we were born, we're always doing something. Now, you could have been great meditators when you first went to school, maybe in grade one. Because, you know, sometimes your teacher would actually ask you, now, what do you think about this? And you'd say, nothing. And get into big trouble. You could have been a great meditator. She said, oh, well done, you're thinking nothing. That's another monk joke. The two, you know, heard a joke about the two monks walking down outside the temple. And one monk said to the other, are you not thinking what I'm not thinking? That's a wild joke. Are you not thinking what I'm not thinking? Because monks don't think so much. And we're still and peaceful. So, as you become more peaceful and still, because we're not used to stillness, we have to have all these instructions on how to put things down and let them go and to be experiencing this beautiful, peaceful, wonderful state of meditation. So because of that, we have to have instructions, like methods of meditation. But all those methods or techniques of meditation are all about learning just how to let go, put things down so you don't keep carrying so much. And I did mention just some basic methods of meditation this morning. But first of all, letting go of your past and future, because there are levels of letting go. And the first thing we have to let go of is time. Because we're such prisoners of time. Some of you are prisoners of your past. Some great tragedy happened. An awful event has occurred in your life. It could be a divorce, it could be the death of a loved one. Could have been losing your job or being criticized or whatever. And that event happened a long time ago and one still hasn't let it go. You're a prisoner of the past. And please remember this, that if someone has hurt you, every time you remember it, you're allowing them to hurt you again. So maybe somebody cheated you. And you remember it now, they cheated me, the dog, the idiot, they should have done that. Every time you remember, they are hurting you another time. How stupid that is. So in my life, I only allow people to hurt me once. They can call me a dog. As soon as they call me a dog, I let it go. As I say, that's why we have two ears for. Now one in, the other one out. So you don't have to keep anything. So that's actually even those bags you've got, I just told this morning during breakfast time. You've got these beautiful bags? But please, before you go home at the end of the retreat, please get a pair of scissors and cut out the bottom. And have that as a meditation bag. And carry it around with you. So whatever you put in goes right through, you don't keep anything. It's a letting go bag. You carry it down the shops. People wonder, why is your bag so light? I said, because it's got a hole in the bottom. It's like my mind. People call me a dog because what I do, I don't keep it. That's why I'm so happy and so peaceful. So, see if you can get my identity card back. I cut to the bottom.
So,
it's when one can let go of the past. And why am I a prisoner of the past? So we say, no, that's gone, it's finished, it's like dead stuff, it's like ghosts. I know that many people in Asia are terrified of ghosts, so you should be most terrified of the ghosts of your past. Let them go, and they won't haunt you in the distance. So we let go of the past. And then we let go of our future. Now, you know, I never plan what I'm going to say next. Even this morning, you get up and have to look, what am I supposed to do today? And even look at what's the talk I'm giving tonight? I don't know what the talk is I'm giving tonight. I'll find out later on this evening. Don't have to look now, it's not tonight yet. Because who knows, we may not make it until tonight. You know, 2012, the end of the world can come early, maybe happen this afternoon, they haven't told us. Who knows? That's one of my favourite sayings I've been telling people in church. Never do today what you can put off until tomorrow because you might die tonight. It's a funny saying, never do today what you can put off until tomorrow because you might die tonight. Yeah, good saying, because you are going to die one night. So why are you getting everything so finished off and completed, but it's a total waste of time, you didn't need to do that anyway, because you might die tonight. So never do today what you can put off until tomorrow, because you might die tonight. It means you can stay in the present moment much more. But don't worry about the future, who knows what's going to happen next. Many of my plans which I had never work out. I have all these plans of what I want to do, where I want to go, what's going to happen. And you know, all those plans when you make them, you think, yeah, I'm going to make it happen. It doesn't happen at all. Something else happens. You might actually defy the future, or your future is defined as things which you never expected to happen. That's life. When you realize that, it's a whole series of unexpected events. And you wonder, why on earth am I worrying and planning so much about the future? The reason why you think so much about the future is because you want to make sure you have a happy, successful, safe future. But then you say, if I want a safe, happy, successful, healthy future, is thinking about the future going to help? It doesn't. But being in the present, that certainly does help. Because this moment, right now, is where your future is being made. Right now, you are making your future health or sickness. Right now is where your future happiness or suffering is being constructed. So if you really care about your future happiness, health and success, you should put all your attention in the place where it's being made, which is right now. Understanding that, you put more time in the present moment, and then you have the most happy, successful, and healthy future. If you're putting your attention, your mindfulness, in the place where your future is being made, right now. When you do that, you have a lot of peace and freedom. I don't have to worry about all the talks I've got to give later on. I don't have to worry about all this other stuff which is going to occur to me later on. Someone else will work that out. I'm just being the present moment, no worries at all. Who cares what's going to happen this afternoon? I don't know what's going to happen this afternoon. I often say, what my life is somebody knocks on my door and says, you've got to come and give a talk now. So I come out, give a talk. I say, now's the time to open your mouth. Now's the time to ask the questions. Now you can go. So I'm in total lack of control over my life. That's wonderful to have no control. To be totally free. You just tell me what to do. And I'll do it. So I don't have any plans. We don't have any plans. We don't worry about the future. And you don't linger on the past. It is great. You have so much peace and freedom. And that's what a real monk really is. Someone who lets go of the past. Someone who doesn't worry about the future. Who can live a lot in the present moment. Simple. in one of the exercises which you can try during this retreat, you can imagine yourself carrying two heavy suitcases, like you see when you go to the airports. People carry all these bags when they travel from place to place. Who picked me up from the airport? Did you see what bags I had? Did I have any suitcases when I arrived at the airport? Who can pass it out there? But if you saw what I carried in my I think you saw me when I came in here, my luggage.
Okay.
You haven't seen my luggage yet. I'll come out and demonstrate my luggage, a wife's luggage. It's just one bag, the monk's bag. That was all, just a change of clothes, toiletries. What else do you need when you travel overseas to a monk? So real monks don't carry suitcases. They just have maybe one bag and that's all they ever need. Yes, I feel so free just to have just such a small amount of luggage. It means you never have to weigh these things. And people say, now how heavy is your luggage? You're overweight. I'm always underweight. I remember many times coming to, especially to Perth Airport. And sometimes you've been overseas a long time, sometimes you've been even to Europe. See, the last time when I went to Frankfurt, just took the other one back. Just a small yarn, which you brought it today. But it's even smaller than your bags. See these big red bags here, it's about 2/3 of that size. I'm coming back from Frankfurt, I'm sort of a retreat there. Going through the customs of Perth Airport, they say, sir, where are your suitcases? So I've got no suitcases. We've been away, been to Europe for a couple of weeks. So this is all I've got. I'm a monk. Ah, yes, you're a monk. Well done. Off he goes. You know, many people, these aren't Buddhists. These are Christians, they're atheists, agnostics. I don't know who they are. But when they see a monk with hardly any possessions, they think, wow, that's what a monk is supposed to do. So you don't carry great burdens. So when you carry heavy suitcases, what happens to you? Oh, your arms ache and your shoulders hurt. And it's very hard to move backwards and forwards. I've never seen any bird flying from country to country with suitcases. Have a look in the sky. They just fly freely in the air. But when you go overseas, how many suitcases do you take? They're so heavy, aren't they? They're such a burden. But anyway, in this exercise, I imagine a suitcase in my left hand as my past. All the memories you've had so far in your life, and you've been carrying them around with you, like holding a heavy suitcase. No wonder your mind feels stressed and heavy, and unable to fly high in deep meditations. It's weighed down with the weight of your past. And that suitcase in your right hand is packed with all the fears, concerns and worries and plans of your future. You know, all the problems with your disease, cancers or whatever other diseases you have. All the worries about your finances or your kids or your friends or what's going to happen. You know, when you carry that suitcase around with you, your worries and fears of the future, how heavy that is. Just like a real suitcase makes your arm ache, so worrying about the future makes your mind suffer. You don't have to do that. So in meditation, we imagine those two heavy suitcases. We actually do an imagining exercise. Two heavy suitcases. As if we've been carrying them for a while. We imagine our arms are aching. We look at in our imagination, the suitcase in our left arm. Left hand, that is our past, packed with all of the things which we keep worrying about, remembering from the past. Then we imagine ourselves lowering the suitcase to the ground, pulling it down, letting it go. Imagine pulling it down, letting it go. We imagine when it reaches the ground, all the weight, all the heaviness disappears. And then we move our left arm away from the handle of the suitcase. So our left arm can hang loosely by its side. di capire di sedici ili di cruperenti. Imagine a suitcase in our right hand. All of our fears arise in the future. We imagine its weight and the pain it's been causing us. We also imagine lowering it to the ground. When it meets the ground, the weight disappears. The burden of the future vanishes. We move our arm away from that suitcase, so our right arm can hang loosely by our side. We let go of the future. Performing an imaginary exercise like that in your meditation actually works. Psychologically, it helps the mind let go of the past and the future. There are very many advantages in that exercise. Number one, no one has taken that past or future away. The suitcases, they're still by your side there. They haven't taken them away, you just put them down for a while. Letting go is only temporary. For many of you also have the sense of standing right between those two suitcases. In the space between the past and the future, that's where you stand, and that's called the present moment, right now. This is where we live in meditation, in the spot between the past and the future, called now. You'll find that the more you are in the present moment, the more you are unable to do any craving to want anything. Because all wanting is about something which hasn't happened yet. It's the mind looking out into the future. All ill will or anger is looking into the past about something which you didn't like which has happened. So when you really get into this present moment, all anger and all craving, wanting cannot exist. It vanishes. So being in this moment, this present moment, is a great place to understand what letting go is. Letting go, not just being in this moment. And it's strange, and why is it that people find it so hard just to be in this present moment? Number one is because they're so afraid. If I don't think about the future, it's going to go wrong. If I don't fix up the past, it's going to haunt me forever. And the opposite is the case. The more you think of the past, the more it's going to haunt you. Please let it go. The more you worry about the future, the worse your future is going to be. So, putting your mind in this present moment, right now, is the first stage of meditation. First time you can really let go of all past and all future. And with it, all anger to the past, all guilt, and also all craving for something in the future. Instead of going places, just stay at peace, at home, not going. Stop being still and realizing me. And what happens next if it's not fear which drives you out of this present moment? It can sometimes be boredom. This is all it is watching this present moment in this boring hall of just sitting down on this seat. This is all it is because we are so used to being stimulated with food, with friends, with movies, with TV, with music. Sometimes it's hard to let all that stuff go so you can be peaceful long enough in this moment to really appreciate it. Remember that sitting I started off with? When I stopped, my hillside got more and more beautiful. The longer you linger in the present moment, the more beautiful it gets. So just hang in there for a while. It gets a lovely place to stay. So how you can actually do that is understanding that all of meditation has to be combined with some kindness. You all know how to be kind, don't you? Kindness is accepting things as they are. If you love your child, sometimes the Buddha gave a similar, just like a mother loves their child. And sometimes I see these children, little monsters, screaming on the aircraft. Sometimes they have to change the nappy. And I've been unfortunate enough sometimes to see the contents of the napkin. I don't know how you mothers do that. It's yucky stuff. Much more stinky than adult sort of stuff. But still, you love your kids so much that you wouldn't mind doing that at all. Isn't it wonderful that what love does is this wonderful acceptance and just caring even for things when they're unpleasant? Isn't that what we do with loving kindness up to this present moment? Literally, we open the door of our heart and mind to this one, no matter what it is. This is just life happening. So instead of actually rejecting anything which comes, somebody makes a noise, it's hot, it's cold, whatever. Instead of rejecting anything, we just allow things to be with this beautiful sense of kindness. I'm opening the door of my heart, no matter what happens. As a monk, I have to do that all the time, because I'm in total no control over my life now. When I go travelling a lot, and sometimes I do get very tired. And sometimes I try and find ways where I can just get a little bit of peace. Some years ago, I was coming back from Los Angeles, and I've been teaching all over the United States. It's very tiring after a while, 16, 17 hour days, and then a long flight. But at least I thought when you go to the airport, you can go into some lounge and have a rest. But no, there's too many people who work in the airport in Singapore who know me. So they were waiting at the gate inside the airport to receive me, which was very nice. But it was always asking questions. Can I ask you a question about meditation? Can I take a photograph? I'm having trouble with my wife. My kid's not doing well at school. So even just transit in the airport, people were asking me all these questions. And they wouldn't leave me alone. And so I thought, what should I do next? And I thought, I know one place I can escape. The toilets. And this was true. I thought, I'll try and escape this trip. Just have a few minutes just sitting on the toilet seat so I can do some meditation and rest. So I went into the toilets in Changi Airport. And the many people who know those airports, they always have toilet attendants. And as soon as I went in, the toilet attendant recognized me. You guys have brought? I said, yes, oh, can I ask you some questions, please? I realized, it's a waste of time trying to escape from your fate. I just have to do this. I don't know if she's here, but the last time I came back from Malacca, when my pen is here, and when she took me back to the airport, KRIA, going back from Malacca back to Perth. Again, at least I think I'm in the airport, I'm in the aircraft, I can just actually read a newspaper and have some rest. But there I was sitting in a window seat, sort of flying from KLIA back to Perth. And then just going down the aisle, this woman passed me by and said, are you Ajahn Brahm? I said, yes I am. I've been looking for you, I want to have told you about something. And I had one last chance because the seat next to me was already occupied by a man. But she said, oh, would you mind exchanging seats, sir? So she had me cornered the whole flight. So you talk your counselling all day, when you go home, you can't escape from it. So, come on, what are you going to do? Except just let go and let it happen. So, never complain about your life. Because you have total control. You've got two choices. You can like it or not like it. Complain, I just have fun with it. I just had fun with it, had a nice time talking to her about relationships and stuff. So, in meditation, in the present moment, please accept whatever it happens to be. Make peace with it. If you make peace with this moment, what it means is you're not making war. You're not fighting. You're not making a battle. Saying, I don't want to feel like this. I don't want people to make noise. I don't want these seats to be so hard. I don't want to be in a dormitory where I've only got 4 foot by 8 foot. So look, you're stuck with that. So make peace with it. If you make peace with anything, so you make peace with that. You just allow that to be. Be kind. Be kind to this moment. Please open the door of your heart to this moment. It's wonderful. At least I've got a place to sleep. I've got food to eat. Wonderful that I'm being cared for in this temple. And be so, so gentle. Make peace, be kind, be gentle with the present moment. And after all, a while, you'll find that you're not just practicing this third noble truth meditation, you're also practicing the fourth noble truth meditation as well, on the path. What is the fourth noble truth again? Eightfold path, yes. And what is the second factor of the Eightfold path? Second factor? Right thought. And right thought, usually called Samasankhapa, has got three components. Who knows the three parts of Samasankhapa, right thought? Good, not violence. That's, sorry?
Non-cruelty.
That's actually just really the same. That's ahimsa kata sankhapa. Who knows the other? Sorry? Who knows the other two? It's the nekama sankhapa, vipaka sankhapa, and ahimsa kata sankhapa. Nekama means letting go. Renunciation. Vipaka is the same word for metta, loving kindness, and ahimsa kata. Non-violence means gentleness. So you find when I say to make peace, be kind, be gentle, I was actually explaining the second factor of the Eightfold Path. Right thought or right intention. So remember, when you're meditating, it's not something separate from the Eightfold Path. Meditation is an expression of the Eightfold Path. So your intention, your thought, make sure it's always according to the Eightfold Path. You are actually doing this to renounce, to let go of things, not to attain things. You're making peace with things. You're being kind. You're being gentle. I don't know how many meditators are so cruel to themselves. They're so harsh, even angry at life, and angry at the people around them. You cough! I was about to get into meditation. You stupid. Actually, you know, put these notes. Ajahn Brahm, can you please put a rule in? But just like in KLI Airport, we have these heat sensors. So we put the heat sensor outside the door, and anyone who's got a temperature who's going to cough, you can't come to a meditation retreat. Anybody who can't sit still gets tortured or gets put into the dungeons of what change of life. There you go, cough to get torture temperature. You don't do that. Sometimes people think that way. There's this last little story. There's this retreat which I taught in Sydney many, 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 many years ago. And there's this one man in the retreat, when he was meditating, he made such a noise. And after only one or two days, at the question time, people have this note, could you please tell people not to breathe so loudly? Disturbing my meditation. So when I read that question out, I said, that gentleman who's breathing so loudly has got nasal cancer and he just can't breathe any other way. And this is his last shot of the dice before he dies. There's no more treatment available for him. He's come here just to try meditation, maybe it might be a miracle. And as soon as I said that, everybody shut up and never asked a question again. When you find out why it is a person coughs, or why they make a noise, or why these things happen, then you realize that you are far too cruel and judgmental. So please be kind. If you're really kind, then nothing disturbs you. Actually, there's a nice ending to that story. The last day of the retreat, which I gave, he came up to me in the interview. And he said nothing happened. He said he was sitting there just meditating as usual, you know, making peace, being kind, being gentle with his condition. He said he heard a pop. He could breathe again. But but only for about a minute, and then it all closed up again, his tumor closed. He said it was amazing, something happened. And that was the last day, and I felt that my opinion was that he left it a bit too late to learn meditation. Yet he got something there, the tumor sort of somehow opened for a moment, but he was so far gone. And the lovely story was about 5 years later, I was teaching a meditation class in Sydney, and this guy came up and said, "Do you remember me?" And look, he looked totally different. He said, "That was me." It worked. Full remission. And I'm spending the rest of my life going around teaching people how to meditate. So these things actually work. They did happen. So for him, he was breathing very, very loudly. And if we had thrown him out of the retreat, he'd have been dead. So by being kind, we actually saved a life. Not only one life, but now he teaches meditation to all these people with cancer. So this is what happened to me, this is what I did, and it worked, look at me. So there are many, many stories like that. So be kind. If someone's making a noise, that's all they can do. So be kind to them. Someone's snoring, sort of on the meditation retreat, in their dormitory. It must be they're going through some sort of difficulty, so let them know. Be kind to them. Because the more you worry about it, the more you get tired. So that way you can have a very, very peaceful time. So that's the first stage of letting go. Being in the moment. And of course, I will teach you for the next few days all the different stages of letting go. And how you can get up on meditation mountain. Higher and higher and higher. I've already given you a lot of instructions. Remember the two types of meditation. The second noble truth and the third noble truth meditation. If you're suffering, it's because you want something. You're brave and salty. You try to control things. Let go, and then you meditate. Stop holding things, just put them down and become still by themselves. May peace be kind, be gentle, and everything works out okay. And that way, and you can be in the present moment. Remember that simply the two suitcases, if you keep worrying about the future, worrying about the past, do that imaginary exercise, holding two heavy suitcases, identify what each one is, put it down one by one, and then you realize you've also put down the future, the past and the future, the real past and future. And that way you can actually live a much more peaceful time. You start letting go, you start becoming still, and you find that meditation is not that hard to do. Much more instructions, but we've got another 8 days to go. So, that's the morning talk today. Are there any questions about what I've just said, or anything which is relating to meditation? So, opportunity for questions. You know, sometimes I say this, meaning I get taught all over the world. I say, any questions? And no one puts their hand up. I say, okay, we can go now. And there's a whole line of people waiting to ask any questions. But they won't come on. Don't be so embarrassed about asking your question. In fact, if you ask your question in public, you are making such good karma because everybody else is interested in the answer. So you're actually helping other people when you ask your questions, because other people also want to find the answer to that question, and you're helping them by giving that answer. So asking a question is also a great act of kindness and merit. So any questions about meditation?
Has it worked?
Yes, okay.
If you keep your mind still, how can we understand the three characters
of Anicca, Dukkha, and Anatta? Ah, because once you keep your mind still, things disappear. First of all, actually this is another simile, because that will take a whole talk to talk about what happens and when things vanish. But imagine a lake of water. When it's not still, when there are waves or even ripples on the surface, you can't see a true reflection of the full moon and the stars at night. Everything becomes distorted when it's not still. But when it's perfectly still, like a glass surface to the lake, then you get a perfect reflection. In the same way, when your mind is still, only then does it perfectly reflect, say the three characteristics. When it's moving, it gets distorted. There's also another thing about vanishing, but I'll talk about that later on in the retreat. The latest book of mine, which is just being edited in the United States, is called The Art of Vanishing.
about nirvana, how to vanish, to disappear. Okay, that's the last question for the time
being.
Thank you. Yes.
Is self-reminder during meditation a kind of interfering?
Self-reminder during meditation kind of interfering. It is a kind of interfering, and it's not so critical at the early stages of meditation, but it's devastating in deeper meditation. So when you start meditation, you can interfere, you can nudge, you can remind yourself what you're supposed to be doing, and give yourself instructions. But the deeper you go in meditation, the more those instructions will start to hinder the process. So the beginning okay, but middle and the end, please don't say anything, so they go totally naturally. And anyway, when you do give many instructions, you've got to be very careful. I've used the simile of the taxi driver. So suppose you're someone like me, that when you leave this retreat, you're going to go to the airport. This time I'm only going to Subang Airport. So imagine I sort of book a taxi, and it's waiting for me just in the car park. I get in the taxi and say, look, I want to go to Subang Airport. Okay? Now I'm a Buddhist, so please turn off the radio. And don't talk to me, I've just finished the retreat. And look, don't drive too fast, because you know, I've just been on a meditation retreat and I'm very, very sensitive, so don't fast. Don't sound your horn. And look, because I'm a Buddhist, and you know, the Buddhists are paying for this taxi, but if somebody wants to come in, please let me come in, be compassionate. It's my affair, so you have to do it the Buddhist way. And don't run the lights. You know, okay, because if it goes yellow, no worry about it, we're not going to be late. Just make sure you can keep all the traffic rules and don't speed. Be really careful, you know, about bicyclists and motorbikes. And obviously, there's many accidents here in sort of KO with motorbikes. And so be very careful, because I'm a Buddhist monk. The last thing I want to do is be responsible for killing somebody because it's in my taxi. So you have to be very, very careful. And be quiet and be very mindful. And look, I'm going to be meditating in the back, so even don't breathe very loudly. And I don't want you to smoke, because that's very bad for my health. Now imagine if you gave all those instructions to that taxi driver, what would he do? He'd throw you out before you get to the gate. He said, look, I know how to drive a taxi, so the only instruction I need, said the taxi driver, is your destination. Now Subang Airport. That's all I need to say. Take me to Subang Airport. And every taxi driver in KL and PJ will get you there. The same way with your mind. Don't give it too many instructions. Come on, mind, watch the breath. Now don't watch it this way, do it that way. Now do it in the passing way. Now do it at the breath. Now not actually at the breath, but just below the breath. Below the nose. And if that doesn't work, you've got to do it at the time. But now don't force it. Do it, you know, mindfully this way, that way. And remember, while you're doing this, if you can see anicca, that's wonderful. But dukkha anatta would also be very, very good. Now make sure you don't control it, because that's when Bob said not to control it. That's the now you know why your mind throws around. And it won't play with you anymore. So give a couple of instructions, but not too much. Otherwise you become control freak. And no one likes to stay with a control freak. Your mind will run away from you. That's the trouble with many people who meditate for many years. They can't be mindful very long. Maybe 1 minute, and your mind's off. You know why? You start meditating, and mind thinks, I've got issues again. I'm getting out of here. And that means you wander off. So rather, your mind runs away from you. You haven't been kind to her. So, not too many instructions. Okay, any other questions you have over there? Please, because now for the next 2.5 hours or whatever, we've boosted meditation. You can actually alternate between walking meditation, sitting meditation. Walking meditation, in places in the grounds here. Are you allowed to walk anywhere?
Yes.
Okay, well, very, very good.
You can sit under the Bodhi tree.
Sit under the Bodhi tree, but people are walking the road outside. That's another old joke. It's an old Chinese saying. I think you must know this one. But, Chinese saying, he who walks the middle path gets hit by traffic coming in both directions. we'll keep out of the body, but it's a good apartment. When you do walking meditation, I'll just give basic instructions, more instructions later on. Choose a straight path if at all possible, defying at one end and the other. You're just going to walk backwards, turn around, and walk back again. And the great thing about walking meditation is you're not getting anywhere. You end up where you started from, which is the great symbol for life. It's true, life is the same, isn't it? You know that old story of those two old men sitting, and they're big friends for life, and one old man, it must be in his 70s or 80s, one old man says to the other, he says, "Oh, I feel terrible, all my joints ache, I really feel sick, I can hardly see, my ears aren't working very well. Oh, life is really tough when you get old. How about you?" His friend says, "Not me, I'm having a great time, I feel like a newborn baby." "How come? You're about 80. I'm a newborn baby," he said. "Sort of, I've got no hair, I've got no teeth, and I've just weed in my pants." Because that's what newborn babies do. So, that's what you start off in life, having to wear nappies. And that's where you end up, wearing nappies. It's true, isn't it? So, we always end up where we started in life. So, Do walking meditation, no, you start at the beginning, you go to the end, and you turn around and come back again. It's a great symbol of life. But as you are not getting anywhere, it doesn't really matter where you get, it's how you get there is an important part of walking meditation. So it's how you get there, how you're walking. So make sure when you're walking, you're letting go, you're making peace, being kind and beautiful. Making peace. Being kind, being gentle, allowing everything to relax. If you want to focus on something, focus on the feet. Noticing they're lifting, they're going forward, they're falling down onto the ground again. So that can be a focus of your attention. Or if you like, you just focus on the sounds of the traffic or the birds around you. Anything which locks you into the best of life. And that way you can have some very peaceful time. Sometimes walking, sometimes sitting. I'll try and give some more instructions later on, but I realize I've run out of time. So, happy meditating. Enjoy it, and we have lunch at 11:30. Is there going to be a bell for lunch? Great, okay, great. And is there any confusion this morning?
There are a few.
Okay.
But not everyone has registered yet.
Okay. Okay, those who want to go for, we don't really call them interviews, we call them interrogations. We've got a little room with a big light. I slap you around to find out what you're in. I learned that from a fellow who was a policeman in Guantanamo Bay. Find out what you're really thinking. Please excuse my sense of humour going over the top, and it makes people laugh on it. But no, the interviews. If anyone has any questions on meditation, please, not about your relationships or your financial problems, or about the problems with your kids, please keep it to meditation. And if the question you want to ask in interview can be asked in public or over on a piece of paper, that is preferable. Because you know what happens sometimes in these interviews? Someone comes in, they ask a question, and it's a very, very good question. I give the answer, and the next person then asks exactly the same question, so I have to give exactly the same answer. And then it comes in number three, here we go again, the same question. It's much more efficient and helpful for me if you ask it once, or on a piece of paper, then everybody can share the answer. Because you may think it's your problem, but your problem is exactly the same as everybody else's problem. So on a piece of paper is much better. But if you do want some personal interviews on meditation. There is a piece of paper or a list somewhere to register for interviews. On the notice board to register for interviews. And when will interviews take place? On that room now. That's the interrogation room. So if you hear any screams from there during the while you're meditating, you know what's going on in there. That'll be the interview room. And you have the opportunities. The best thing to use the interview spot is something really interesting is happening in your meditation. And it's something really weird or strange, then come and ask. So I can give you some good help there. Or if you're really, really going crazy and nothing's working at all, and come in there and have a bit of sort of a nice advice for some peace. But if things are going okay, there's just no need for you to be seen.
I think morning when you do have to say,
that's right, yeah. That's usually the case. Probably in first season, first day, I don't have any interviews, but if anyone wants to come in, you can do a couple. Okay, and there's interviews in the afternoon, and so as well, so you have plenty of opportunities. In the meantime, have fun. Enjoy the meditation. Don't sit for too long, you can always go out and stretch your legs. Is coffee and tea always available outside? Yeah, if you get really, really stuffed up in your head. You just want a bit of coffee or tea to help yourself, fine. You know, when I was at school, maybe you were at school in Malaysia, did you have playtime? PA lessons, but you didn't have a play, did you, lessons? We went into like a playground and played soccer and things?
Yeah.
You did. Recess. Yeah.
PE. Physical education.
Yeah, I know, but then actually recess, where you can just hang out with your friends. Recess, okay. So remember, give yourself recess during the meditation classes. So if you really, really feel that your mind is getting very stiff, go out and have a cup of tea. And just be at peace. Don't try and do anything. Because if you try and concentrate for 10, 12, 13, 14 hours of the clock, it's bad for your brain. You won't be able to do it. Just sometimes you work hard, you meditate, and you realize, no, I need just to relax. Just do nothing.